87. The Riddens. Chaos in Alethkar is, of course, inevitable. Watch carefully and do not let power in the kingdom solidify. The Blackthorn could become an ally or our greatest foe, depending on whether he takes the path of the warlord or not. If he seems likely to sue for peace, assassinate him expeditiously. The risk of competition is too great. From the diagram, Writings upon the Bedstand Lamp, paragraph 4, Adratagia's third translation from the original hieroglyphics. The shattered plains had been shattered again. Kaladin strolled across them with Zeth's shardblade on his shoulder. He passed heaps of rock and fresh cracks in the ground. Enormous puddles, like small lakes, shimmered amid huge chunks of broken stone. Just to his left, an entire plateau had crumbled into the chasms around it. The jagged, ripped-up base of the plateau had a black, charred cast to it. "This is going to happen again," Kaladin said. "That other storm is still out there?"
"Yes," Syl said, sitting on his shoulder. "A new storm. It's not of us, but of him."
"Will it be this bad every time it passes?" Kaladin asked, surveying the wreckage. Of the plateaus he could see, only the one had been destroyed completely. But if the storm could do that to pure rock, what could it do to a city? Particularly since it blew the wrong way.
"Stormfather,
Lates would no longer be Lates. Buildings that had been constructed to face away from the storms would suddenly be exposed."
"I don't know," Syl said softly. "This is a new thing, Kaladin. Not from before. I don't know how it happened or what it means. Hopefully it won't be this bad except when a high storm and an everstorm crash into each other."
Kaladin grunted, picking his way over to the edge of his current plateau. He breathed in a little stormlight, then lashed himself upward to offset the natural pull of the ground. He became weightless. He pushed off lightly with his foot and drifted across the chasm to the next plateau. "So, how did the army vanish like that?" he asked, removing his lashing and settling down on the rock.
How should I know?" Syl said. "I was kind of distracted."
He grunted. "Well, this was the plateau where everyone had been, perfectly round. Odd, that. On a nearby plateau, what had once been a large hill had been cracked wide open, exposing the remnants of a building inside. This perfectly circular one was far more flat, though it looked like there was a hill or something at the center. He strode in that direction. "So they're all Spren," he said. "Sharp blades." Syl grew solemn. "Dead Spren," Kaladin added.
"Dead," Syl agreed. "Then they live again a little when someone summons them, sinking a heartbeat to their essence."
"How can something be a little alive?"
"We're Spren," Syl said. "We're forces. You can't kill us completely. Just sort of."
"That's perfectly clear."
"It's perfectly clear to us," Syl said. "You're the strange ones. Break a rock and it's still there. Break a Spren and she's still there. Sort of. Break a person and something leaves. Something changes. What's left is just meat. You're weird."
"I'm glad we established that," he said, stopping. He couldn't see any evidence of the Alethi. Had they really escaped? Or had a sudden surge of the storm swept them all into the chasms? It seemed unlikely such a disaster would have left nothing behind.
"Please let it not be so."
He lifted Zeth's sword off his shoulder and set it down point first in front of him. It sank a few inches into the rock. "What about this?" he asked, looking over the thin, silvery weapon. An unornamented blade. That was supposed to be odd. "It doesn't scream when I hold it."
"That's because it's not a Spren," Syl said softly.
"What is it, then?"
"Dangerous,"
She stood up from his shoulder, then walked as if down a flight of steps toward the sword. She rarely flew when she had a human form. She flew as a ribbon of light, or as a group of leaves, or as a small cloud. He'd never noticed before how odd, yet normal it was that she stuck to the nature of the form she used. She stopped just before the sword.
"I think this is one of the honor blades. The swords of the heralds."
Kaladin grunted. He'd heard of those.
"Any man who holds this weapon will become a windrunner,"
Syl explained, looking back at Kaladin.
"The honor blades are what we are based on, Kaladin. Honor gave these to men, and those men gained powers from them. Spren figured out what he'd done, and we imitated it. We're bits of his power, after all, like this sword. Be careful with it. It is a treasure."
So the assassin wasn't a Radiant.
"No. But Kaladin, you have to understand. With this sword someone can do what you can, but without the checks a Spren requires."
She touched it, then shivered visibly, her form blurring for a second.
"This sword gave the assassin power to use lashings, but it also fed upon his stormlight. A person who uses this will need far, far more light than you will. Dangerous levels of it."
Kaladin reached out and took the sword by the hilt, and Syl flitted away, becoming a ribbon of light. He hefted the weapon and set it back on his shoulder before continuing on his way. Yes, there was a hill up ahead, probably a creme-covered building. As he drew closer, blessedly, he saw motion around it. "Hello?" he called. The figures near it stopped and turned.
"Kaladin?"
a familiar voice called.
"Storms, is that you?"
He grinned, the figures resolving into men in blue uniforms. Teft scrambled across the rock like a madman to meet him. Others came after, shouting and laughing. Dre, Pete, Bissig, and Sigzil, Rock towering over them all.
"Another one?"
Rock asked, eyeing Kaladin's shardblade.
"Or is he yours?"
"No," Kaladin said. "I took this from the assassin."
"He is dead, then?"
Teft asked.
"Yes." "You slew the assassin in white,"
Bissig breathed.
"It's truly over, then."
"I suspect that it is just beginning," Kaladin said, nodding toward the building. "What is this place?"
"Oh," Bissig said. "Come on. We need to show you the tower. That Radiant girl taught us how to summon the plateau back, so long as we have you."
"Radiant girl?" Kaladin asked. "Shallan?"
"You don't sound surprised," Teft said with a grunt.
"She has a shard blade," Kaladin said, one that didn't scream in his mind. Either she was a Radiant, or she had another of these honor blades. As he stepped up to the building, he noticed a bridge in the shadows nearby.
"It's not ours," Kaladin said.
"No," Layton said. "That belongs to Bridge 17. We had to leave ours behind in the storm."
Rock nodded.
"We were too busy stopping light-eyed heads from becoming too friendly with swords of enemies." "Ha! But we needed Bridge here. Way platform works, we had to get off him for Shallan Devar to transport herself back."
Kaladin poked his head into the chamber inside the hill, then paused at the beauty he found inside. Other members of Bridge 4 waited here, including a tall man Kaladin didn't immediately recognize. Was that one of Lopin's cousins? The man turned around, and Kaladin realized what he'd mistaken for a cap was a reddish skull plate. Parshendi. Kaladin tensed as the Parshendi man saluted. He was wearing a Bridge 4 uniform. And he had the tattoo.
"Relaine?"
Kaladin said.
"Sir,"
Relaine said. His features were no longer rounded and plump, but instead sharp, muscular, with a thick neck and a stronger jaw, now lined by a red and black beard.
"It appears you are more than you seemed," Kaladin said.
"Pardon, sir," he said, "but I would suggest that applies to both of us."
When he spoke now, his voice had a certain musicality to it, an odd rhythm to his words.
Bright Lord Dalinar has pardoned Relaine,
Sigzil explained, walking around Kaladin and entering the chamber. For being Parshendi? Kaladin asked.
For being a spy, Relaine said. A spy for a people who, it appears, no longer exist.
He said this to a different beat, and Kaladin thought he could sense pain in that voice. Rock walked over and put a hand on Relaine's shoulder.
We can give you the story once we get back to the city, Teft said.
We figured you'd come back here, Sigzil added, to this plateau. And so we needed to be here to greet you, for all Brightness Devar grumbled. Anyway, there's a lot to tell. A lot is happening. I think that you're kind of going to be at the center of it.
Kaladin took a deep breath, but nodded. What else did he expect? No more hiding. He had made his decision. What do I tell them about Moash, he wondered, as the members of Bridge Four piled into the room around him, chattering about how he needed to infuse the spheres in the lanterns. A couple of the men bore wounds from the fighting, including Bissig, who kept his right hand in his coat pocket. Gray skin peeked out from the cuff. He'd lost the hand to the assassin in white. Kaladin pulled Teft aside.
Did we lose anyone else? Kaladin asked. I saw Martin Payton.
Rod, Teft said with a grunt. Dead to the Parshendi.
Kaladin closed his eyes, breathing out in a hiss. Rod had been one of Lopin's cousins, a jovial Herdasian who hardly spoke Alethi. Kaladin had barely known him, but the man had still been Bridge Four, Kaladin's responsibility.
You can't protect us all, son, Teft said. You can't stop people from feeling pain. Can't stop men from dying.
Kaladin opened his eyes, but did not challenge those statements. Not vocally, at least.
Cal, Teft said, voice getting even softer. At the end there, right before you arrived. Storm, son. I swear I saw a couple of the lads glowing. Faintly, with stormlight.
What?
I've been listening to readings of those visions Bright Lord Dalinar sees, Teft continued. I think you should do the same. From what I can guess, it seems that the orders of the Knights Radiant were made up of more than just the knights themselves.
Kaladin looked over the men of Bridge Four and found himself smiling. He shoved down the pain at his losses, at least for the time being.
I wonder, he said softly, what it will do to Alethi's social structure when an entire group of former slaves starts going about with glowing skin.
Not to mention those eyes of yours, Teft said with a grunt.
Eyes? Kaladin said.
Haven't you seen? Teft said. What am I saying? Ain't no mirrors out on the plains. Your eyes, son. Pale blue like glassy water. Lighter than that of any king.
Kaladin turned away. He'd hoped his eyes wouldn't change. The truth, that they had, made him uncomfortable. It said worrisome things. He didn't want to believe that Light Eyes had any grounds upon which to build the oppression.
They still don't,
he thought, infusing the gemstones in the lanterns as Sigzil instructed him.
Perhaps the Light Eyes rule because of the memory, buried deeply, of the Radiance. But just because they look a little like Radiance, doesn't mean they should have been able to oppress everyone.
Storming Light Eyes, he was one of them now.
Storm it!
He summoned Scylla's blade, following Sigzil's instructions, and used her as a key to work the Fabrial.
Shallan stood at the front gates of Urethiru, looking up, trying to comprehend. Inside, voices echoed in the grand hall, and lights bobbed as people explored. Adolin had taken command of that endeavor, while Navani set up a camp to see to the wounded and to measure supplies. Unfortunately, they'd left most of their food and gear behind, on the shattered plains. In addition, the travel through the Oath Gate had not been as cheap as Shallan had first assumed. Somehow, the trip had drained the majority of the gemstones held by the men and women on the plateau, including Navani's fabrials, clutched in the hands of engineers and scholars. They had run a few tests. The more people you moved, the more light was required. It seemed that Stormlight, and not just the gemstones that contained it, would become a valuable resource. Already they had to ration their gemstones and lanterns to explore the building. Several scribes passed by, bringing paper to draw out maps of Adolin's exploration. They bobbed quick, uncomfortable bows to Shallan and called her Brightness Radiant. She still hadn't talked at length with Adolin about what had happened to her. "Is it true?" Shallan asked, tilting her head all the way back, looking up the side of the enormous tower toward the blue sky high above. "Am I one of them?" Pattern said from her skirt. "Almost you are. Still a few words to say."
"What kind of words?
An oath?" "Light weavers make no oaths beyond the first," Pattern said. "You must speak truths."
Shallan stared up at the heights for a time longer, then turned and walked back down toward their improvised camp. It was not the weeping here. She wasn't certain if that was because they were actually above the rain clouds, or if the weather patterns had simply been thrown off by the arrival of the strange high storms. In camp, men sat on the stone, divided by ranks, shivering in their wet coats. Shallan's breath puffed before her, though she had taken in Stormlight, just a dash, to keep herself from noticing the cold. Unfortunately, there wasn't much to use for fires. The large stone field in front of the Tower City bore very few rock buds, and the ones that did grow were tiny, smaller than a fist. They would provide little wood for fires. The field was ringed by 10 columnar plateaus, with steps winding around their bases, the Oath Gates. Beyond that extended the mountain range. Krem did cover some of the steps here, and dripped over the sides of the open field. There wasn't nearly as much as there had been on the shattered plains. Less rain must fall up here. Shallan stepped up to one edge of the stone field. A sheer drop. If Noadan really had walked to this city as the Way of Kings claimed, then his path would have included scaling cliff faces. So far they had found no way down, other than through the Oath Gates, and even if there were such a way, one would still be stranded in the middle of the mountains, weeks from civilization. Judging from the sun height, the scholars placed them near the center of Roshar, somewhere in the mountains near Tu-Bela, or maybe Imul. The remote location made the city incredibly defensible, or so Dalinar said. It also left them isolated, potentially cut off, and that in turn explained why everyone looked at Shallan as they did. They'd tried other shard blades. None were effective at making the ancient fabrial work. Shallan was literally their only way out of these mountains. One of the soldiers nearby cleared his throat.
"You certain you should be that close to the edge, Brightness Radiant?"
She gave the man a droll look. "I could survive that drop and stroll away, soldier."
Yes, Brightness," he said, blushing.
She left the edge and continued on to find Dalinar. Eyes followed her as she walked, soldiers, scribes, light eyes, and high lords alike. Well, let them see Shallan the Radiant. She could always find freedom later, wearing another face. Dalinar and Navani supervised a group of women near the center of the army. "Any luck?" Shallan asked, approaching. Dalinar glanced at her. The scribes wrote letters using every span reed they had, delivering messages of warning to the war camps and to the relay room in Tashik. "A new storm might come, blowing in from the west, not the east. Prepare." New Natanan, on the very eastern coast of Roshar, would be struck today, after the Everstorm left the Shattered Plains. Then it would enter the Eastern Ocean and move toward the origin. None of them knew what would happen next. Would it round the world and come crashing into the western coast? Were the high storms all one storm that rounded the planet? Or did a new one start at the origin each time, as mythology claimed? Scholars and storm wardens thought the former these days. Their calculations said that, assuming the Everstorm moved at the same speed as a high storm this time of year, they'd have a few days before it returned and hit Shinovar and Eerie, then blew across the continent, laying waste to cities thought protected.
"No news," Dalinar said, voice tense. "The king seems to have vanished. What's more, Kolinar appears to be in a state of riot. I haven't been able to get straight answers on either question."
"I'm sure the king is somewhere safe," Shallan said, glancing at Navani. The woman maintained a composed face, but as she gave instructions to a scribe, her voice was terse and clipped. One of the pillar-like plateaus nearby flashed. It happened with a wall of light revolving around its perimeter, leaving streaks of blurred afterimage to fade. Someone had activated the Oath Gate. Dalinar stepped up beside her and they waited tensely, until a group of figures in blue appeared at the plateau edge and started down the steps. Bridge 4.
"Oh, thank the Almighty," Shallan whispered.
It was him, not the assassin. One of the figures pointed down toward where Dalinar and the rest of them stood. Kaladin separated from his men, dropping off the steps and floating over the army. He landed on the stones in stride, carrying a shard blade on his shoulder, his long officer's coat unbuttoned and coming down to his knees.
"He still has the slave brands," she thought, though his long hair obscured them. His eyes had become a pale blue. They glowed softly.
"Stormblessed," Dalinar called. "High Prince," Kaladin said. "The assassin?"
"Dead," Kaladin said, hefting the blade and sticking it down into the rock before Dalinar.
"We need to talk. This... my son...
Bridgman?"
Navani asked from beside. She stepped up and took Kaladin by the arm, as if completely unconcerned by the stormlight that drifted from his skin like smoke.
"What happened to my son?"
"There was an assassination attempt," Kaladin said. "I stopped it, but the king was wounded. I put him someplace safe before coming to help Dalinar."
"Where?" Navani demanded. "We've had our people in the war camp search monasteries, mansions, the barracks."
"Those places were too obvious," Kaladin said. "If you could think to look there, so might the assassins. I needed someplace nobody would think of."
"Where then?"
Dalinar asked. Kaladin smiled.
The Lopan made a fist with his hand, clutching the sphere inside. In the next room over, his mother scolded a king.
"No, no, your majesty," she said, words thickly accented, using the same stern tone she used with the axe hounds. "You roll the whole thing up and eat it. You can't pick it apart like that."
"I don't feel so hungry, Nana," Elokar said.
His voice was weak, but he'd awoken from his drunken stupor, which was a good sign.
"You'll eat anyway," Mother said. "I know what to do when I see a man that pale in the face, and pardon your majesty, but you are pale as a sheet hung out for the sun to bleach. And that's the truth of it. You're going to eat. No complaints."
"I'm the king. I don't take orders from—"
"You're in my house now," she said,
and Lopan mouthed along with the words.
"In a Herdazian woman's house, nobody's station means nothing beside her own. I'm not going to have them come and get you and find you not properly fed. I'll not have people saying that, your brightship. No, I won't. Eat up. I've got soup cooking."
The Lopan smiled, and though he heard the king grumble, he also heard the sound of spoon against plate. Two of Lopin's strongest cousins sat out front of the hovel in Little Herdaz, which was technically in High Prince Sabariel's war camp, though the Herdazians didn't pay much attention to that. Four more cousins sat at the end of the street, idly sewing some boots, watching for anything suspicious.
"All right," Lopin whispered. "You really need to work this time."
He focused on that sphere in his hand, just like he did every day and had done every day since Captain Kaladin had started glowing. He'd figure it out sooner or later. He was as sure of it as he was sure of his name.
"Lopin!"
A wide face ducked in one of the windows, distracting him. Chilinko, his uncle.
"Get the king dressed up like a Herdazian again. We might need to move."
"Move?"
Lopin said, standing.
"Word has come in to all the war camps from High Prince Sabariel," Chilinko said in Herdazian. "They found something out there on the plains. Be ready, just in case. Everyone's talking. I can't make sense of it."
He shook his head.
"First that high storm nobody knew about, then the rains stop early, then the storming king man of Alethkar on my doorstep. Now this. I think we might be abandoning camp even though night falls around the corner. Makes no sense to me, but get the king man taken care of."
The Lopin nodded.
"I'll get to it. Just a sec."
Chilinko ducked away. Lopin opened his palm and stared at the sphere. He didn't want to miss a day practicing with his sphere, just in case. After all, sooner or later he was going to look at one of these and... The Lopin sucked in light. It happened in an eye blink. And then there he sat, stormlight streaming from his skin.
"Ha!"
he shouted, leaping to his feet.
"Ha! Hey, Chilinko! Come back here! I need to stick you to the wall!"
The light winked out. The Lopin stopped, frowning, and held his hand up in front of him. Gone so fast? What had happened? He hesitated. That tingling. He felt at his shoulder, the one where he'd lost his arm so long ago. There, his fingers prodded a new nub of flesh that had begun sprouting from his scar.
"Oh, storms, yes! Everybody give the Lopin your spheres! I have glowing that needs to be done!"
Moash sat on the back of the cart as it rattled and wound its way out of the war camps. He could have ridden in front, but he didn't want to be far from his armor, which they'd wrapped up in packages and stacked back here. Hidden. The blade and plate might be his in name, but he had no illusions as to what would happen if the Alethi elite noticed him trying to flee with it. His wagon crested the rise just outside of the war camps. Behind them, enormous lines of people snaked out onto the shattered plains. High Prince Dalinar's orders had been clear, though baffling. The war camps were being abandoned. All Parshmen were to be left behind, and everyone was to make their way toward the center of the shattered plains. Some of the High Princes obeyed. Others did not. Curiously, Satius was one of those who obeyed, his war camp emptying almost as quickly as those of Sabariel, Roeon, and Aladar. It seemed like everyone was going, even the children. Moash's cart rolled to a stop. Graves stepped up beside the back a few moments later.
"We needn't have worried about hiding," he mumbled, looking over the exodus. "They're too busy to pay attention to us. Look there."
Some groups of merchants gathered outside of Dalinar's war camps. They pretended to be packing to leave, but weren't making any obvious progress.
"Scavengers," Graves said. "They'll head into the abandoned war camps to loot, storming fools. They deserve what is coming."
"What is coming?" Moash said. He felt as if he had been tossed into a roiling river, one that had burst its banks following a high storm. He swam with the current, but could barely keep his head above water. He'd tried to kill Kaladin. Kaladin? It had all fallen apart. The king survived, Kaladin's powers were back, and Moash was a traitor. Twice over.
Everstorm, Graves said. He didn't look nearly so refined now that he wore the patchwork overalls and shirt of a poor dark eyes. He'd used some strange eye drops to change his eyes dark, then had instructed Moash to do the same. And that is... The diagram is vague, Graves said. We only knew the term because of old Kavalar's visions. The diagram says this will probably return the Voidbringers, though. Those have turned out to be the Parshmen, it seems. He shook his head. Damnation. That woman was right. Woman? Yasna Kolin. Moash shook his head. He didn't understand any of what was happening. Graves's sentences felt like strings of words that shouldn't go together. Parshmen? Voidbringers? Yasna Kolin? That was the king's sister. Hadn't she died at sea? What did Graves know of her? Who are you, really? Moash asked. A patriot, Graves said. Just like I told you. We're allowed to pursue our own interests and goals until we're called up. He shook his head. I thought for sure my interpretation was correct, that if we removed Elokar, Dalinar would become our ally in what is to come. Well, it appears I was wrong. Either that or I was too slow. Moash felt sick. Graves gripped him on the arm. Head up, Moash. Bringing a shard-bearer back with me will mean that my mission wasn't a complete loss. Besides, you can tell us about this new Radiant. I'll introduce you to the diagram. We have an important work. Which is... The salvation of the entire world, my friend. Graves patted him, then walked toward the front of the cart where the others rode. The salvation of the entire world. I've been played for one of the 10 fools, Moash thought, chin to his chest. And I don't even know how. The wagon started rolling again.